Well, here we are.
It is time, Simba.
If you understand that reference, you might be about the age where we should be working together. It's possible. But it is now one of 3 times a year that I'm accepting clients for my freedom framework, overcoming food sensitivities and increasing energy without unnecessary restriction. My goal for my one-on-one clients is to take them through frameworks and explore tools for achieving 50, 80, 90% of their goals in just a few months and show them how to continue to heal on their own so they don't need me anymore. Honestly, I think we're doing great one-on-one work here, helping women that would otherwise be falling through the cracks, thinking that they're just aging, that they're just moms, that they just, and it may be true that they just have stress, when really those stress hormones and their other core systems just really need some serious support and some serious love to serve them for years to come without symptoms. So if you'd like to clear inflammation, eczema, food sensitivities, or improve energy and brain clarity, I'd love to chat with you. You can book a call with me at kristabigler.com/FSS, kristabigler.com/FSS, and that link will be in the show notes.
A lot of the time when people have some kind of intense emotional experience, some kind of a traumatic thing that they go through, the emotional energies that become trapped in the body during that event will anchor them to that event and will prevent them from moving on.
I gotta get myself a little more faith, a little more love.
I'm your host, Krista Bigler, and I'm going to guess we have at least one thing in common, that we're both in pursuit of a less stressed life. On this show, I'll be interviewing experts and sharing clinical pearls from my years of practice to support high-performing, health-savvy women in pursuit of abundance and a less stressed life. One of my beliefs is that we always have options for getting the results we want, so let's see what's out there together. All right, today on The Less Stress Life, I have Dr. Bradley Nelson. So he was actually born and raised in rural Montana and grew up on the back of a horse. But as a child, he suffered two life-threatening illnesses, both of which were healed not by traditional Western medicine, but by separate alternative methods that tapped into the power of energy, which shaped his life going forward. I won't read you the whole bio, but what I was touched by was he was, I think, asking God, what should I do? You went into computer programming, then you were like, what should I really do? And then you went into chiropractic. And now you've retired from really being a practicing chiropractor. And you have several books, but the first of which being The Emotion Code. So Dr. Brad's niche is really about emotions being stored in the body, which is just a topic I'm very interested in. So we're going to talk all about that today. Welcome, Dr. Brad.
Thank you, Krista. Thanks for having me on. Great to be here.
Yeah. I'd like to hear a little bit about, so you go to chiropractic school, you're practicing as a chiropractor. I'd love to hear about when really it became apparent that emotions work as the cause maybe of some of the pains and ailments people were dealing with coming in. A former back surgeon I like to quote all the time that I've had on the show a few times, and he always said, the body doesn't know what to do with emotions, or the brain doesn't know what to do with the emotions, so it just stores them in the body. And I think it's such a concise way of saying it. And I know
That's
you have
basically
your,
it.
Yeah, I think about my own history and how I came to this piece as well in practice. And I just have to wonder if you started practicing as a chiropractor, trying to do things as you would as a chiropractor, and you were just running into walls. Will you tell me about how that kind of unfolded?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a gradual process. The doctor that I first practiced with, that was a mentor of mine, used a really basic, really sort of a primitive method of releasing emotional energy from people, and didn't really use it a lot, used a little bit, but I had a little bit of exposure there. And then I was just really obsessed. I think like a lot of doctors are obsessed with trying to help their patients. And that's how it was for me. I was really specifically obsessed with getting to the real underlying causes of people's problems. I just had this insatiable desire to know what was really causing their problems and also to really fix them. I didn't want to band-aid people. I wanted to know what was really going on. And that led me on this continuing search, really, to try to learn everything that I could learn from old sources, ancient sources, modern sources. Anything that seemed to work, I would keep. Things that didn't seem to work, I would discard. And I had just some really interesting experiences with this. When I was first dabbling with emotional energies, let me back up a little bit. I had this training as a computer programmer. I had a business back in the early 80s called the Computer Tutor, and it was just me. And I would go into people's offices and they'd have a new IBM PC, for example, and they wouldn't know what to do with it. There'd be no software. They knew that there was a lot of capability and power in this machine sitting on their desk, but they didn't know what to do and didn't know how to use it. And so I would write software for people. I'd look at the flow of their business and how things worked, and then I would write the software. And I thought I was going to be doing that for the rest of my life. And it was really a lot of fun. But then it was a really interesting thing, actually literally an answer to prayer, really, that brought me back to this old dream that I had of going into the healing arts. And so having this computer programming knowledge gave me a really unique vantage point when I got into practice, because I had really come to believe that, of course, the subconscious mind, the brain, it's a computer in certain ways. And I gradually began to learn about that computer and how we can communicate with that computer. And as a computer programmer, it was interesting because the subconscious mind, I began to realize, is like a binary computer. In other words, it's a computer that has no interface that we know of or that we've ever had any exposure to. For example, I'm sitting here at my laptop. It has a screen and it's got a keyboard. So that's the interface. I can communicate with it and it can communicate with me. If you've got a phone, it's a smartphone, it's a touchscreen interface. The subconscious mind, over many years, I began to realize, is a binary computer, at least in terms of its interface. And so it can communicate with us, and it communicates with us in terms of symptoms or through the symptoms that we experience. And those might be mental or emotional or physical. They might be pain or infertility or asthma or digestive problems, or it might be anxiety or depression or panic attacks or phobias or PTSD or whatever. So I gradually began to realize and look at things in this way, that the subconscious mind is a binary computer and it's communicating through symptoms. And so then I gradually began to learn how we can communicate with it by asking questions. And since it's a binary computer, we can ask questions and get answers. And I didn't actually come up with this. This was something that other people had come up with over the years, but that was through muscle testing. For example, if I were there with you, Krista, if you were to hold your arm out parallel to the floor, and if you were to make a true statement like, "My name is Krista," if I were to press down on your outstretched arm, you'd be able to resist me. If you were to say something that's untrue or negative, like, "My name is Bob," if you were to say that, then if I were to press down on your outstretched arm, your arm would go weak. And your listeners can try this. It actually works. And that's been around for a long time. And it goes back to many decades ago, really, as being just something that was almost like a party thing, a party trick or gag you could do with people. Nobody understood why it worked, but it's a window into this subconscious binary computer. And I started having these experiences where, for example, one day a woman came in to see me and thought she was having a heart attack. And she had crushing chest pain, difficulty breathing. Her left arm was completely numb, left side of her face, totally numb. And I told my staff, "Look, it looks like she's having a heart attack. Give me 1 minute with her." Luckily, we were really close to a medical center. And if we needed an ambulance, we could get one. I told my staff to stand by. We might need one. But so I started asking some questions, getting some answers from her subconscious mind, and very quickly, just within seconds, found that there was some kind of emotional energy that was associated, that was creating these symptoms for her. And so I asked a few more questions and found that this had originated 3 years before. And we have a table of emotions that we use in the emotion code. It's 2 columns and 6 rows and 60 emotions in the chart. And so I was asking, "Okay, what emotion is this?" It turned out that this emotion was grief. And it took less than 60 seconds to figure all this out. And when I figured this out, that it was grief from 3 years before, all of a sudden she bursts into tears and she's crying and she's saying, "I can't believe that's still affecting me. I thought I dealt with all that." And I said, "What in the world happened?" And she said that 3 years before, her husband had been having an affair and she suddenly found out about it and confronted him with the evidence, and the marriage blew up. And she was just so deeply betrayed. She was really deeply in love with him, but that was the end of the marriage. And so she went through this tremendous process of grief. That emotional energy of grief was so much, it was so big and so powerful, that became trapped in the body. Just like you said, the quote from the other doctor that the body doesn't know what to do with these emotional energies, so it just stashes them away in the body. That's exactly what happened with her. And so we call these trapped emotions. So that I was able to release that energy just with a few swipes of a magnet down the governing meridian, which is right down the middle of the back. And all of a sudden, the chest pain was gone instantly. The difficulty breathing was gone. Within about 3 seconds, the feeling came back into her arm, her left arm, and into her face. And it was just complete and total immediate relief. And she left the office a few minutes later, probably about 10 minutes later, after joking with me and my staff. And I remember after she left, sitting down at my desk and my head was spinning, thinking, what in the world did I just witness, right? What? Let me think about this now. What just happened? That was many years ago, probably 30 years ago. And I'm still in touch with her. She's never had any other trouble with her heart. If she'd gone to the emergency room, sure looked like she was having a heart attack. But I think she would have been one of these people that gets all the tests run and all the heart enzymes are normal. And so people like that are told it wasn't a heart attack. But of course, now we know about cardiac syndrome, where people die from a broken heart, essentially. And I think that it's very likely that she would have become one of those people if we hadn't released that energy, that emotional energy that was causing those symptoms. I think it's very possible that she might not be alive today. She is. She has a horse ranch in Oregon, and she's doing fine. But I think that she might have become a statistic and people wouldn't have realized, oh, it was actually her husband's affair that really was the end of her. And so what I found as years went on was that the emotional baggage that we have, these emotional energies that become trapped in our bodies from these experiences that we would rather not go through, or from the emotions that come up for us that we just stuff because we don't want to go there, we don't want to experience those things, eventually those emotional energies begin to manifest in some ways. And the astonishing thing about this, that 90% of the physical pain that people have is due to their emotional baggage. And we've got over 13,000 people now that we've certified to do this work, the Emotion Code, in over 80 countries around the world. And they're all experiencing the same thing. It's just an amazing thing that physical pain, so much of the time, is caused by emotional energy. And we know that because when we find and remove those trapped emotions, pain immediately reduces or disappears completely, in many cases, instantaneously. But it's not only physical pain, it's also other things. Trapped emotions are actually an underlying cause. Now, it's been 35 years now as a holistic chiropractor, many years in practice and many years since then training people. And what I have seen is that in every case where someone has been diagnosed with some kind of a major disease or a lesser disease, there is always an emotional component to that disease process. In every single case that I have seen over all these years. And so the emotional side of our makeup and what our emotional baggage is actually doing to us is, it's really the elephant in the living room, in my opinion. And it's really the reason why the Emotion Code struck such a nerve, because the book came out in 2007, but it just keeps going and going now in many other languages and so on. And people all over the world are finding out, wow, this actually works. Dad doesn't have any back pain anymore. And gee, I released some trapped emotions from my sister-in-law and now she couldn't get pregnant, but now she's pregnant all of a sudden. You know, things like that. That's the kind of thing that's happening all over the world. And it's really gratifying to me to be part of this and to be privileged enough to bring this into the world.
Totally. Stuff. I have referenced your chart several times for clients. And as you said, it's a couple of columns and 6 long. You'll have a chance to correct me in a moment. For a very long time, I've been interested in emotions being stored in the body. And this probably started with Chinese face mapping, which was just part of my story with having a skin breakout certain places and seeing how that correlated to the body. I think that's where it started maybe for me. And I had someone on the show that did Chinese face assessments. And we talked about the kind of the research that was done and how they arrived at this. And essentially, it was all of these ancient healers just brought all their materials together. And there was just all this correlation. So they had thousands of case studies where they were like, in this case, this was correlated with this. So I'm curious, and this is what I think about when I look at the Emotion Code chart, because a very common one that comes up is that, oh, anger is stored in the liver or gallbladder, which is part of your chart as well. Mm-hmm. What ancient traditions, medicine, modalities did you reference to collate this chart, or was it part of your own work as well? How did you determine where to put things?
It really goes back to Chinese medicine, of course, thousands of years ago, 5-element theory. And so I was looking at a lot of those old charts. And also really to put this chart together, what I did is I muscle tested to see, just tapping into the universal intelligence, the database of all that is, and asking patients as well, not consciously, but asking the subconscious minds of my patients where these things should go, where these emotions should go on the chart. So that's really how the chart came together. And before I put this chart together, I had another chart that was about, was at least twice as big as this, maybe a little more than twice as big. And I gradually was able to whittle it down. The beautiful thing about it is, and the really interesting thing is that this chart I found was all that I needed, because the subconscious mind will basically help you to find whatever emotion it is, whatever emotion is closest to the exact emotional frequency that you're looking for. The subconscious mind is really interesting. It doesn't have a verbal center, so it doesn't really think in terms of words so much. It thinks in terms of frequencies. There's no past. There's no future for the subconscious mind. Everything is in the present. And so when we're using the chart, the subconscious is able to take you to the closest emotion to what it is you're looking for. And so that, I think, could bring us easily to what we call the heart wall and what that's about, because that's a whole kind of another topic, but it's the most important part, really, of the emotion code. And it has to do with the heart. Back in the 60s, when I was a kid, I remember when doctors, Richard DeBakey did the first heart transplant, right? It was a big deal, worldwide news. And it didn't take too long when heart transplants became fairly routine that doctors started noticing something interesting. And that was that patients would sometimes come back and report strange things, that they had, along with their new heart, they had received suddenly now a different taste in food or music or sports, things like that. Sometimes they'd have memories of being in places that they never in their life had ever visited. And in every case, when these people were connected with the family of the donor, they would find out, yes, our son was a baseball player. That must be why you love baseball now and you go to all the games. You didn't care before. Or, yeah, our daughter visited Rome every year. It was her favorite place in the world. And now you have memories of being in Rome, but you say you've never in your life ever visited Rome. So those must be her memories, right? How bizarre, right? There are whole books written about this, right? It's amazing. But what we have found is that the heart really is what the ancients believed it to be. They believed the heart was the seat of the soul and the source of love and creativity and romance and the core of our being. And in the West, we've generally ignored all those ancient beliefs. But now it's coming full circle and we're starting to realize, oh, okay, the heart really is a second brain. It's got a lot of gray matter and white matter in it. And there are lots of communications. In fact, most of the communications between the brain and the heart are going from the heart to the brain. And we're now aware of things like heart rate coherence and heart rate variability and so on, and the importance of those things to achieving what you want to achieve and being in the flow state and so on. What we have found is that when you feel like your heart is going to break because you're going through a breakup or someone's died or something bad has happened to you, that's a physical sensation that we refer to with words like heartache. And so, Krista, if you're like most people, you've probably experienced that feeling at some point or another.
I was trying to cultivate that feeling as you were describing it. Not like very intentionally, but I was just trying to call to mind the time where I felt that.
Yeah. Does that ring a bell?
That's a hard one, Brad.
Yeah. I know that in my own life, I can think back. It's hard to conjure up the same feeling, but I can remember crying myself to sleep at night sometimes when I was a kid. And Wow, going through difficult things. We've all been there. We move on with our lives, right? We're survivors. But the problem is when you're actually in that moment and you feel like your heart's going to break, that's an assault really on that deepest core of your being, your heart. And so the subconscious mind will put up a wall around that heart. And that wall that we call the heart wall is made of layers of your emotional baggage, literally your trapped emotions. So this had to be shown to me. It was actually a really interesting experience that I had that I talk about in the book, but I never in my wildest dreams would have imagined that this goes on. But we figured that about 93% of people put up a wall like this around their heart. And it's an invisible wall. It's like a force field. You can't see it. But it's a protective mechanism put up by the subconscious to protect your heart from being broken. The problem is when you have a heart wall, it interferes with your ability to really give and receive love. It makes it harder for you to connect with other people, harder for you to fall in love and stay in love. And it also makes it harder for you to really manifest the perfect blueprint that lies within your heart for the best life that you can possibly have. I believe that's a real thing. And so when that wall is taken down, it's not unusual at all for people to fall in love who never thought they would, for people to have creative ideas that just start to flow spontaneously for them. And it's the most important part of the emotion code, is why I wanted to bring it up, because it is often the most life-changing part of this work. Because you can go your whole entire life and have this invisible wall around your heart and wonder why life doesn't work better for you, why it's so hard for you to find love or create the life you want, etc. And it's really all about your heart, because the best ideas that you'll ever have, I believe, are going to come from the heart, your heart. They're not going to come from your brain. It's all about your heart. And that's why people tell you, hey, you graduate high school or something like that. They say, hey, you need to follow your heart. And that's great advice. But what if you have a heart wall?
That's the thing. It feels like a literal wall. And that is the thing for me that I find most challenging, or the most toxic form of stress I find, is the unrealized type. And that's what it feels. That's what a heart wall feels like. It's like the unrealized pile of emotions that have to be dealt with, that have to kind of be unlayered. So how do you identify this heart wall? You gave some good self-assessment questions already, right? Where people could maybe either say, I resonate with that, or I don't.
Yeah.
But how do you actually evaluate this intangible thing and then take down the wall?
Yeah. You have to have a way to communicate with the subconscious mind, because you don't consciously know if you have a heart wall or not. The odds are good that you do, and you might have had it for a long time, maybe since you were a child. But there are different ways to communicate with the subconscious mind. And of course, we outline all of those in the book, and there are lots of videos online about how to do this. But if you'd like, what I could do is I could walk your listeners through a real simple way to communicate with the subconscious.
Wonderful. Everyone likes application.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Let's do that.
If you're urinating a lot when you're drinking water, maybe you're not actually hydrating that much, or in other words, getting the fluid and nutrients into the cell. Electrolytes are minerals that help fluid and nutrients get into the cell. I recommend all of my clients start by drinking electrolytes when we begin our work together to improve energy. And then we get even more strategic with our electrolyte recommendations as test results come in. Now, generally, electrolytes are potassium, sodium, and chloride. One of my favorite electrolyte products is Pickleball Cocktail from Jigsaw Health, because it's one of the only products you can get with an adequate dose of potassium to meet my recommendations, which is critical for blood sugar, which everyone should care about, hormone health, and digestion. Huge thing for relapsing digestive issues. Jigsaw Health is also maker of the famous Adrenal Cocktail, made popular by the pro-metabolic corner of the internet and Root Cause Protocol, as well as a multi-mineral electrolyte for recovery called Electrolyte Supreme. You can get a discount on all of Jigsaw's amazing products, including Pickleball, Electrolyte Supreme, and Adrenal Cocktail, at jigsawhealth.com with the code LessStressed10. That's three S's, LessStressed10.
First of all, if you think about a plant, if you put a plant in a pot and you put that pot near the window, you're going to have to rotate that plant. Otherwise, it's going to end up permanently bent towards the light coming in from the window. So plants will grow in that direction of a positive input. Plants will also grow away from negative inputs, like harsh, continuous sounds and things like that. They'll grow away from inputs like that. The subconscious mind of the human being has, of course, that same capability. And if you're standing, you can also do this sitting, but it really works best standing. And we call this the sway test. If you're standing up and you're very relaxed, what will happen is, if you're holding thoughts of positivity or congruency, your body will tend to sway forward after within 3 to 10 seconds. If you're holding thoughts of negativity or falsehood or incongruency, your body will tend to sway backwards, totally involuntarily, if you're holding these thoughts. And so let's do this. If you're driving or something, then you'll have to do this later. And if you're seated and you can't stand up, you can just sit right on the edge of your chair. And this can also work. But if you can stand up, go ahead and stand up. Drop your hands down to your sides. Stand with your feet about shoulder width apart. Take a deep breath and let that out, and just relax. Now, as you're standing there, very relaxed, you might notice that there's a little bit of motion going on. It's impossible, of course, to stand perfectly still. And so there's always a little bit of movement going on, and that's just the result of your postural muscles working to keep you standing upright and keep you from falling over. But let's think about something negative to start with. And about the most negative thing that I can think of is war. We hear that word all the time, and we've heard that word all of our lives. But for a moment, I'd like you to think about what really goes on in war. What's really happening on a human level? What are people doing to other people? What's happening to villages and cities and families and relationships? And think of all the tears that have been shed over all these wars that have been fought on this crazy planet from the very beginning. Now, as you're consciously thinking about war and what it really means, what that word really means, when your subconscious mind begins to connect with what you are consciously thinking, your subconscious mind will then start to move your body backward. You'll start to sway backward. And that's your subconscious mind trying to move you away from that thought, that sheer negativity of that thought of war. And again, this takes usually between 3 to 10 seconds. The more you practice this, the easier it gets. But I'm just giving you the basics here. So let's shift gears and let's go to something really positive. Again, close your eyes, relax, take a deep breath, let it out. Hands down by your sides, feet shoulder width apart if you can, or sitting right on the edge of your chair. And I'd like you to imagine that we're living in the future. Imagine that 1,000 years have gone by and you're still alive, but you're in a different sort of a state now. You're surrounded in a place of unconditional love. And imagine that you have grown so much over these last 1,000 years that you have this unlimited capacity to love others, and that your ability to love others is so big that your heart can't even contain that love. And that love that you have for all beings and all of creation expands out from your heart, and it goes out and it fills every crack and every crevice in the world and goes out beyond the world, out into the universe. And imagine that love of yours filling the immensity of space. Just imagine for a moment what it would be like to be that level of beingness, to be an ascended being like that. Imagine what that would actually be like. Now, as you think about that, the moment your subconscious mind starts to connect with what you're consciously thinking about, the subconscious will start to move your body forward, because that, I believe, really is a potential future, really, somehow, for all of us. And so what you can do with this test is you can actually use it to answer questions and get answers to whether or not you have emotional baggage in your body, trapped emotion. So what you can do, for example, let's go ahead and do this again. Sit on the edge of your chair or stand there very relaxed, arms down by your sides, feet shoulder width apart, and pose a question to your subconscious mind. Let's try, do I have a heart wall? Number one, do I have a heart wall? Do I have that wall of energy around my heart? It's blocking me from really give and receive love totally and create the life that I want. Do I have one of those? Is that a real thing for me? And as you're thinking about that, you may sway forward for yes, you may sway backward for no. And so this is what we can do is this is the first method that we teach in the Emotion Code book of how you can ask questions and get answers. And then using the chart of emotions, let's say that you find out you do have a heart wall. The next question would be, can I release a trapped emotion from my heart wall? And if you get a forward sway on that, we have a list of emotions in this chart that we use. And you can actually Google the chart of emotions online, just the Emotion Code chart. And then the way we do it is we use a process of elimination to identify the emotion that needs to be released. For example, we might ask, is this emotion, if we get a yes answer that there's a trapped emotion that we can release, we ask, is it in column A? If it's not, column B. In other words, the subconscious mind will sway forward for yes, you'll sway forward for yes, or backward for no, okay? And so that's how you can get these binary answers from the subconscious mind. And very quickly, you can zero in on the trapped emotion and then release it. And that's basically the process of how it works. It can be a little more complicated sometimes. Some emotions you might need to actually identify when they occurred, for example. That's pretty simple too. If you're 40, you just ask, did this occur earlier than 20? Yes. Earlier than 10? No. So between 10 and 20. And you can figure it out that way. So it's really quite rapid.
Very early in my career, I did muscle testing training. And so it feels that strategy where you're narrowing things down. And something that comes up, I think, for anyone with muscle testing, or it was even taught in programming, was sometimes this, and now this is an interesting question because earlier I was going to ask you this as a person who's doing the muscle testing. Sometimes our own stuff, right, is a bit of an interference or subjective interference, right? So if your own health, your own baggage can muddy the waters on muscle testing. Anything you would want to say about that? And I would say that people who are listening to this, they might say, yep, I totally agree with that. Or they might say, that could also be really subjective if you were looking for a certain answer. How would you answer that? I feel like there's lots of ways to do this, the same thing though, as well. There's probably other things that you teach for finding the emotion also.
Yeah, there are lots of other methods. But yes, that's true that there's a subjective part of muscle testing, and it's really almost an art more than a science. And there is a little bit of a learning curve to it. And once you've practiced a little bit, it's not difficult, but it is important to stay very open. And I learned that lesson. But one of the things we teach our practitioners about is an experience that I actually had with muscle testing. When I was in practice, I used to have women who would know friends of patients and so on of mine. And when they would get pregnant, they would come in to see me and I would test them. It was a free service that I offered. I test them to see what the sex of their baby was going to be. That's about 98% accurate. But see, I didn't care if it was going to be a boy or a girl. It didn't matter really to me. So I was really subjective. Then my wife got pregnant. And because of an experience that she had with a kind of a waking sort of a vision, she felt like she was done having kids and actually vocalized that one day. And all of a sudden, this little girl appears in her mind's eye and says, "Wait, you're not going to have me?" And her heart immediately melted. And a few months later, when she got pregnant, we thought, okay, this is the little girl that's coming. And we were excited about this little girl coming to our family, and we were going to make room for her, and it was all going to be great. And so you can get good answers to the sex of a baby after the first trimester is over. Before that, it's all over the map. And so after that first trimester, periodically, I would ask my wife through muscle testing, okay, are you pregnant? Yes. Is it going to be a girl? Yes. Okay, great. No problem. And so we had some names picked out for the girl. My wife had the baby at home with a midwife, and I was there. And I'll never forget the moment that I realized, oh, okay, this isn't a girl. This is a boy. And there was no mistaking it. And so I thought, how in the world did I get wrong answers that whole time? I got wrong answers because I had a subconscious and even a conscious desire, really, for the answer to come out a certain way. So this is one of the things that we're very careful to teach everybody about, that you have to be open to whatever the answer might be and accept that. And if you have some kind of subconscious desire, the mind is like a puppy. The subconscious mind will try to please you. And so, yeah, if you have a desire for a test to come out a certain way, then it can sway the results of the testing. So you do have to be very open, but it's okay. It's just something you have to keep in mind.
Well, now I have to ask, did you have a girl after the boy?
You know what? We had that boy. Then we had another boy. And on that one, I don't think we even asked. And yeah, our daughter Lizzie finally showed up 10 years after my wife, and two boys after that experience. And she just turned 24.
Cool. I love that. Oh, man. That's okay. So as we're thinking about unpacking, especially deep-seated emotions, the conversation comes up a lot about releasing traumas or people who are trauma aware or whatnot. And I don't have a lot of feelings about this because I don't try to necessarily dabble in this, but it comes up. This comes up a lot, right? If you say you're going to help people release emotions, and you talked earlier about using a magnet, right, along meridians. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing lean ancient Chinese traditions, mm-hmm. I assume, if I'm wrong. But what would you say about this? And maybe you have a great story about this too. I wouldn't be surprised if you had a real situation in your office in the past where you tried to release an emotion and it was quite audible and maybe thrashing, or anything that has come up here around any feelings around releasing emotions and any potential negative to this.
Yeah, I haven't seen any negative aspects of releasing trapped emotions, although everybody will go into a period of processing when emotional baggage is released. And so they may cry for a day or so. They may be emotionally labile for a day or so, but typically that's all it is. And the end results are usually good. Although sometimes what happens is when we release trapped emotions, sometimes that emotional energy has been holding back a healing process that may suddenly begin. And so sometimes symptoms then in that first stage of healing may get worse before they get better. And we realize that, and that's okay. As far as trauma goes, I have an interesting story I want to share with you. There was a guy came to my office one day and he told me he was 42 years old. He said that 4 years before he'd been in a car wreck. He was rear-ended at a high rate of speed. He got whiplash and he said that his neck still hurt like the day after the accident. It was a 9 on a 0 to 10 scale. He'd seen a couple of other doctors for it. And so I thought, gee, that's interesting. 4 years, two other doctors, neck still this painful. That's odd. And he had x-rays and so on. And there wasn't anything obviously wrong with his neck. The habit that I had when I was in practice was sometimes really helpful. And the habit was that I would, before I'd work on somebody, I would take a moment and ask for help from up above, from God. We all believe in different things, higher power, source energy, whatever. But I believe that God is very real and is aware of us. And so I took just a moment and silently asked for help from up above. And I basically said, Father, if there's something else going on here that I should know about, help me to understand this, because this sounds strange. And as would happen on rare occasions, this answer just flowed in to me. And the answer was that when he was rear-ended, there was a lot of energy that was released, the energy that crumpled the fenders and bent the frame in his car and everything else. And that energy went through the car and through his body. But the answer was that some of that energy that was produced and released in that accident had actually become lodged in his neck. And that was the end of the answer. And I thought, oh, that's weird. So some energy from the accident stuck in his neck. So took a magnet and swiped it down the middle of his back a few times with an intention to release that energy. We call this physical trauma energy. And I said, okay, try your neck down, move it around. So he looks left and right and up and down and tilts his head back and forth. And he looks at me and he said, how did you do that? And I said, how does it feel? I said, I'd say it's about a 2 now. And I said, when's the last time it felt that good? And he said, oh, before the accident, for sure. So this is a kind of energy that's like a trapped emotion. It's really it's like a ball of energy that can sometimes become trapped in the body. This can happen from surgeries very commonly, or from receiving some kind of a physical blow. And when we talk about emotional trauma, this, by the way, is in the body code, which is the next level up from the emotion code. And it's an app that is available on, it's called the Body Code System. You can find things like this and release these. But a lot of the time when people have some kind of intense emotional experience, some kind of a traumatic thing that they go through, the emotional energies that become trapped in the body during that event will anchor them to that event and will prevent them from moving on. They'll also oftentimes prevent them or really interfere with their ability, at least, to forgive themselves or whoever wronged them or whatever happened, so that they become stuck, anchored to the past because of that emotional energy. We find that when we release those emotions, it opens people up to be able to forgive and move on and find peace. That's one of the other really nice things about the emotion code. Another nice thing about it is that people don't have to go back and re-experience or get re-traumatized. We just find the emotional energy and release it. And most people can do that. They can find the trapped emotion and release it in less than a minute, typically, once they learn how to do this process.
Yeah. I'm thinking about other ways that we might find. I gravitate to this, some integrated breathwork modalities. And I remember not super long ago, I was in a pretty deep integrative breathwork session. And out of nowhere, it came up that I should forgive my father. And I was like, I didn't even know I needed to forgive him for something. So it's very funny how as you start to move energy. And what came from that was changes in my body as well. It was like, I just let go of other baggage, as stories I'm sure you hear. And you've talked a little bit about this magnet that you swiped up and down. I think sometimes this topic feels a little bit intangible to people, or how can I release energy? And so you took us through the swaying exercise, if you call it something different, but
yeah,
the sway test. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other strategies that you educate on for releasing energy?
Sure. When I was back in practice developing all of this and working with people day in and day out, I was using some pretty expensive high-end magnets to do this. And my belief system at the time was that I needed to use these magnets. Well, when I was writing the Emotion Code book, I got to the chapter about magnets where I was explaining all of this. And then I realized all of a sudden, gee, people are going to spend $20 on this book and then they're going to have to go buy a $150 magnet to do this. And it dawned on me that I had never actually tried other magnets. So I started experimenting with other kinds of magnets to do this, to release these energies, really powerful magnets, really weak magnets, positive polarities, mixed polarities, negative polarities. And I found that everything worked. They all worked just the same. And then as time went on, I began to realize, okay, you can actually use your hand to release these. You don't have to use a magnet. And so you could, because really what we're doing is we're putting energy into the governing meridian with an intention to release that emotional energy that's trapped in the body. And it's really all about quantum physics. It's about collapsing the wave function of the current situation into a new wave function. It can get really complicated, but it's actually really simple. But you could use practically anything, really. You could use a crystal. You could use a laser. You could, to be honest with you, Krista, you can actually just do it in your mind because the mind is so powerful and intention is so powerful. And subatomic particles respond to intention. And we know that subatomic particles will change their behavior depending on what the observer is expecting to see. And so this work really, I think, is the simplest, easiest, and most clear application of these really advanced principles in quantum physics that exists in the world. People who have done lots and lots of work with chemistry and, of course, physics and so on, when they start to understand how this works, it makes perfect sense to them that, for example, you could work with someone that's on the other side of the planet and that your energies can become entangled with theirs and that you can test them and get instantaneous results with them, even though they're half a world away. Quantum physics explains that very adequately and perfectly clearly. But we're just now, I think, moving into this next phase of human existence where the understanding of quantum physics is eventually going to become commonplace. For right now, we're still stuck in the old Newtonian models and the Industrial Revolution and the body is just a machine, yada, yada, yada. But as time goes on, we're really waking up. The consciousness of the whole world is expanding, I think, at a breakneck speed, and it's never going to go back to where it was ever. I think the level of consciousness of the world is getting bigger and bigger every single day. And so that's why we're here talking.
Yeah.
It's part of that, right?
Yeah, that's an interview topic for tomorrow. I'm pretty excited about. Finally, before we wrap up, because what so often people sometimes come to something like this, they come to emotion. So when someone comes in for neck pain, he's coming into the chiropractor, physical therapist, right? You think you've got this physical malady, right? When people mm-hmm. have what they think is a nutritional issue, they'll come to me, right? But so often I center back, if depending on what's going on, we'll center back to emotions as your practice eventually landed in. But when people come in for one thing and don't always realize it's an emotional piece, some people are open to this and some people are not open to it. Do you think that there are a lot of challenges releasing emotions if someone has a wall up around it? Do you think that they're as able to do this? What do you think needs to happen for them to be able to release these stored emotions or they're carrying around limiting their life?
Yeah, I think that faith and belief on the part of the patient is important. I think that if a patient has or a client has really no level of belief at all in what is going on and what's being done for them, then what's being done for them can still work, but it will work better if they're involved and if they're part of that process. And so what I used to do with my patients is I would try to educate them first and bring them up to speed on what was going on. And now what we do with our practitioners and others is we tell them, look, if you're trying to work with somebody that just doesn't believe at all in what you're doing, if they're willing to take a look at the Emotion Code book and read the book, it will bring their level of belief up to a point where you can probably work with them and get things done. If they're not willing to go there, then it's okay. They're at that point on their journey. There are lots of other people around you who are ready that you can work with. And it's such an interesting thing. I think that no matter how gifted the doctor is, if a patient believes they're going to die, for example, they're probably going to die. And the doctor's probably not going to be able to save them because the subconscious mind is so vastly powerful. And if there are deep beliefs in that subconscious mind about not getting well or about passing away or whatever it is, it's going to be difficult to change that, if not impossible. In fact, we have our work started with the Emotion Code, and then we produced the Body Code, and that's another book that I wrote, the Body Code. And the Body Code system is an app that's available. But then our next level of certification is something that we call the Belief Code, where we're actually able to use the subconscious mind, use the binary computer to identify specific negative statements, negative beliefs. And we can identify entire negative belief systems in the subconscious mind, and we can actually now delete those in fairly short order. And so that's another thing that I just thought of in talking about these beliefs. But it's interesting because what I go back to a lot of the times is the ancient healers, and the most gifted healer that I've ever heard, of course, is Christ. And it's interesting because if you look in the Bible, it says that when he went back to his hometown of Nazareth, he couldn't do any miracles there, even though We'd been out raising the dead and healing the sick and giving back sight to the blind and turning water to wine and all these amazing things. He goes to his hometown and he couldn't do any miracles there because nobody had any faith at all that he was who he said he was, right? Because, oh, that's the kid that broke my window with the baseball or whatever, right? They had grown up with him. And so nobody believed that he was who he said he was. So I've always thought that was interesting, that powerful of a healer as he was, yet because nobody had any belief, he was kind of hampered. So I don't know. It's a fascinating topic.
I think that is such a good mirror to sometimes people struggle with families, right? That's something I've definitely released is you cannot, that's not always your place to do that for your family. And yeah, I think you answered the question there, right? You just have to be at peace with that sometimes.
Yeah, you do, I think. And always remember that there are lots and lots of other people who are ready. And so some people just need to percolate for a while and then you come back to them in a year or two and maybe they'll be ready.
We covered a lot today and you piecemealed a little bit along the way as the journey has been for you, right? The emotion code, the body code, now the belief code. What's coming next mm-hmm. for you and where can people find you online?
They can find me online at discoverhealing.com. And also I have a blog at bradleynelson.com. It's Dr. Bradley, Barry, Daly, Y, NELSON.com. And our big push right now in our company is just translation because the work that we're doing is just really exploding around the world and we're just trying to keep up. And we've got lots of translation work to do. And we've translated our certification programs now into a number of different languages, but we've got more to go. The whole world has lots of healing that needs to take place. And so the emotion code is in many languages now. And I'm so blessed and so privileged to be able to travel and do events and meet people all around the world. It's just the most incredible thing. I'm so grateful. It's a wonderful life that my wife and I have. But I have this amazing team of people that work with us. And I just can't imagine doing anything that's more fulfilling or rewarding to be able to help people discover their own healing abilities and discover healing for themselves. And that's why we named our company Discover Healing. It seemed to make sense.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Krista. Bones, well, they just keep breaking.